You're listening to a classic business podcast as heard on Classic 1027. 1027. This is Classic Business with Michael Avery.
As the coronavirus spreads, hospitals have been on the front lines. They've been under microscopic monitoring on how they're safeguarding their operations, especially after Netcare had to shut down two of its facilities. The hospital group completely closed St. Augustine's and Kingsway Hospitals in Durban, while Parkland Hospital, also in the same city, had to close its emergency department at one stage. Mediclinic also was forced to close new admissions at Morningside not too long ago. And it's against this backdrop that Netcare reported a decline in profit at the halfway mark of around just over 34% to 733 million rand. And that's before the effect of accounting changes that bring leases onto the balance sheet. So just throw IFRS into the headache pot at the same time. CEO Richard Friedland is on the line. Evening, Richard. In your 23 years that you've been at Netcare, this is the first time, I'm sure, that you've had to take a prudent approach and say you can't issue guidance. I think that just underscores what an unprecedented time this is. Just take me through the primary impacts of COVID-19 on the business.
Yeah, thank you very much, Michael. Absolutely. It's unprecedented times. It's the first time in our history we haven't declared a dividend, that we've had to withdraw guidance, that we've had to put in cash preservation measures, and we've had to ask the banks for a waiver on our debt covenants. And I think that's what COVID-19 is doing globally. And just as an introduction to COVID-19, I think it's important to say that the textbook has yet to be written. Mm. And we're on a vertical learning curve as we contribute to discovering more about this virus. And even though 2,500 articles have been written since January, which itself is unprecedented, we know less and less about this virus and how it will evolve into the future. I think the other big issue around COVID that people are grappling with is that fundamentally it's going to require a paradigm shift in human behavior. And that's what's difficult to prevent its transmission. And we've begun to realize through our own experience in Netcare that until the sociological shift in society as a whole is firmly embedded, both in the workplace or in our homes or in our communities, we won't successfully be able to control it. So the theory of social distancing and wearing a mask and not shaking hands is one thing, but everyone's been socialized in exactly the opposite fashion. And so in practice, Michael, that becomes very, very difficult, and I think that's what we've all been struggling with.
It is a monumental shift, as you say, a sociological shift in the way we interact and have behaved for decades, for centuries even, until we find a vaccine. Just talk to me about what you're seeing in terms of the novel nature of this pathogen. And you mentioned it earlier, the fact that we're learning more, and we still almost daily seem to have new research coming out saying, well, we thought it was a pneumonia strain, and then it came out and it had impacts on blood clotting, and it had impacts on the nervous system and the brain. What role does a hospital group like Netcare here play in better understanding this new pathogen and ensuring that our responses are adequate?
I think we've learned two fundamental lessons, and one of them we learned at St. Augustine's when we were at the tip of the spear. Remember, we had our first COVID patient on the 9th of March. There must have been seven cases in the country in total. And what we first learned about this disease is the very dangerous nature of asymptomatic spread, that you can have someone coming to your hospital that shows no symptoms whatsoever, that is completely asymptomatic but is carrying this virus, and before you know it, the genie is out of the bottle and they're spreading that virus. And that continues to bedevil efforts to stop community spread, to stop spread across the world. This idea that someone can have the virus, they don't have a fever, they don't have any symptoms, and unless you happen to test them, you will not be the wiser. So asymptomatic spread, one of the hardest things to deal with. The second that we've learned about this virus is that it lasts on surfaces for several days. And people talk about it as the so-called fomite spread. In other words, spread from an inorganic object. Someone who has not washed their hands, for instance, happens to touch a surface. They're COVID positive, and they leave that footprint or that handprint or that viral print on a surface, and unbeknown to anyone else who happens to touch that doorknob or that surface, they've aided in the spread of the virus. Those are probably the two most important lessons we've learned. We've had to up our cleaning. We thought our cleaning was at a very high level. Well, I can tell you, Michael, we've gone to absolutely fastidious levels of cleaning and re-sterilizing every aspect of our hospitals, be it tea rooms, be it toilets, be it surfaces, wherever. The biggest lesson of all is for us to say that we should consider every person we come into contact with as COVID positive. So whether you're in a shopping center, or whether you're filling up with petrol, or you're in a your community or at home, consider the person you're engaging with as COVID positive. And if you do that, you'll make sure you wash your hands, you wear a mask, and you practice social distancing. That is the only caveat we can say in terms of spreading this disease.
Those non-pharmaceutical interventions, as Martin Kingston of Business for South Africa was just talking to me about, the challenge now as society is getting that messaging across. Because as we phase out of level four into level three, there may be a false impression created in the broader public's mind that we're getting the better of this virus and that people can go back to their old ways. And it's anything but. We need to be more vigilant.
And this is the issue. Community spread is our biggest concern. And remember, Michael, we have communities in South Africa that have population densities that are the highest in the world. Alexander has the highest population density than anywhere else in the world. So does Khayelitsha. So does Mitchell's Plain. So does Diepsloot. And, you know, when you look at the pandemic elsewhere in the world where there were epicenters, our population density is much higher in these areas. And these are areas where it's difficult for people to socially distance. You know, it's a wonderful theory, but people are living on top of each other. They don't have access to running water. They don't have access to the ability to wash their hands. And so these are real practical issues that I think we're facing in South Africa at the moment. But credit to government. They've done an extraordinary job thus far in locking down the country.
There has been a lot of criticism towards the back end of this lockdown phase. One got the sense in the beginning, the first 3 weeks, almost everyone was united around the president's leadership and his health minister. Then through the extension, there were murmurings as we saw some irrational regulations released, and then still more as we went into a lockdown light, so to speak, in level four. But it's an unenviable position to be in, to lead a country. I think leaders all around the world are grappling at the moment. We saw the case, the fatality rates in the US go past 100,000 over the weekend. Overall, what gives you confidence that government did the right thing here?
Well, I can tell you this, Michael. For those of us who are at the coalface, at the front line of fighting this pandemic, we absolutely applaud the actions of government and in particular of our health minister. And we think that South Africa has led the way in a far better way of trying to curtail this virus than many of the so-called developed countries around the world with far greater resources. And it's only when you're at the front line of this pandemic, working 24 hours a day to prevent its transmission, that you begin to understand how dangerous, how virulent, how infectious and contagious this virus is. And so whilst, yes, there will always be controversy at the fringes about specific elements of the lockdown, the entire process around it, it was entirely appropriate in our opinion and one that we fully support. Theoretically, of course, if one's sitting in one's home and not exposed to any of this, it might seem ludicrous. But for those of us as healthcare workers on the front line, it was 100% appropriate.
Well, great to hear that insight from you, Richard. As you say, on the front line, very easy to critique while you're safe from home on social media and Twitter and that kind of thing. In terms of your partnership approach with government through this, and I was just chatting to Business for South Africa's Martin Kingston, he really looked at this crisis as a way to further strengthen that partnership that has been such a hallmark of the new administration's approach so far. How are you going to be working alongside the state or the public healthcare sector when the numbers start rising into winter?
Well, I think we always see healthcare as a partnership, and we stand ready to do our duty and to serve South Africa and the people of South Africa. And we are going through an unprecedented crisis. As Netcare, we did this during the national strike where we took 872 patients. We did it during the World Cup. We helped out at Marikana and elsewhere. And we made it very clear, Michael, when we issued our trading update at the end of March, that we are more than willing to see patients, state patients, on a cost recovery basis. We're not seeking to make profit here. It is a time for the private sector, in fact, all sectors, to put aside self-interest. And so that offer still stands to government.
Now, as you said in your introduction, you've withheld the dividend. I think many companies are doing that as a prudent measure, and also chose not to provide guidance considering how uncertain things are at the moment. What kind of impact have you had on things like occupancy, and when do you start to expect to see that returning to some semblance of normality?
That's an excellent question, Michael. I think we showed in our presentation this morning just what the lockdown did to our occupancy in the month of April, and there was a massive diminution of activity across the board. Obviously, a lot of it was lockdown-related, you know, because there's no travelling and people are being locked down. There was a 60% reduction in unnatural deaths, and so clearly we didn't see the trauma cases. There were lower levels of respiratory viruses because people were in their homes and kids weren't at schools. And in May, we started to see a recovery of that, and we are trending towards a 15% increase in activity versus April. But depending on when the surge occurs in COVID and the extent of that surge will determine A, our ability to cope with the demand, and B, our ability to return to, and I say this in inverted commas, normal levels again.
And just one last question. It's an issue that with all the focus on COVID has certainly not garnered much attention here in South Africa. You've applied to the Lesotho High Court to try and save the floundering public-private partnership that you embarked on more than a decade ago over there through the 425-bed Queen Mama Hartle Memorial Hospital. It's sad news, this, because public-private partnerships are certainly the way to go. What happened here, and what is your chance of recovering this particular project?
Well, it is sad indeed, because I think despite some of the incorrect and, if I may even say, mendacious reports in the press around Lesotho, that PPP has been an outstanding success, both in providing outstanding healthcare in a dignified, compassionate and excellent way to the people of Lesotho. And the outcomes have been outstanding. Unfortunately, there has been a breakdown in terms of the functioning of that board. And to that extent, we applied for judicial management. We still believe in the viability of that project and will still support that project given what it's done over the years. And, you know, a lot of this has been corroborated by international research papers and independent third parties. Unfortunately, public-private partnerships are often mired in political wrangling and also, in this case, a number of disgruntled shareholders.
Well, one hopes on this Africa Day that we can start to learn our lessons from those developmental success models like South Korea that managed to separate the politics from the economic pragmatism on the ground and ensure that the country can develop on a more sustainable economic trajectory post-COVID-19. Netcare CEO Richard Friedland, thank you very much for your time, and to you and all of those on the front lines who are keeping us safe from this novel pathogen at this time. I'd just like to say personally, thank you very much, and keep up the good fight.
So appreciate that, Michael. Thank you.